with the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man.
Welcome to the Leisureman Midweek Podcast on NBC Sports. I'm Paul Papps. He's Andrew Perloff. We got a lot to get to today, Perloff. I'm going to give you the choice. I'm going to kind of host this thing. You're going to be the right-hand man here.
Got it.
So you don't know where we're going, but I'm going to let you decide.
I'm excited.
Do you want to go with a serious topic, a fun holiday topic, a sports topic, or an all-American topic? You pick. Serious, sports, holidays, all-American.
Let's go holidays,
ooh,
then sports, then All-American, unless you want to go a different direction.
Okay, holidays first. Do you remember as a child the best holiday-related present that you got or worst holiday-related present that you got? Do you celebrate both Christmas and Hanukkah?
Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome, isn't it? Did you double dip because of that?
Oh, it was the best. So are we talking about sports presents? Or
a present that was in some way sports-related, a jersey,
okay,
tickets.
Gloves were everything back then. I was a big baseball player.
Okay.
So every year I wanted a fancy new glove. That was big.
Didn't they have those like Spalding Wilson A2000
yeah.
gloves? Were like
I was a Rawlings guy.
Oh, okay. Sponsored by?
No, not sponsored. But then I remember breaking it in the week between Christmas and New Year's, even though I wouldn't be able to use it. That was a big one.
I never played baseball growing up, but I heard that you would take a rubber band and put the baseball in the heel of it or like the middle.
That's
of
a good, yeah, that's a good method.
And you wrap a rubber band around it, let it sit for a month.
I was a big oil it every night. You oil it, and then you put it under your pillow too, with a baseball or a softball in it.
Oh, good.
To get it used to.
You must have had massive neck aches and headaches.
Yeah, no, it's caused. I've been seeing a chiropractor for years. Because the other thing was Eagles gear, and from my mom and dad would always buy either jersey, but there would be knickknacks, like weird Eagles things around the house.
Yeah, mittens, stuff like that.
I don't know if Chicago was like this, but in Philadelphia, you walk into pretty much most houses have Eagles paraphernalia all over. You'd never see a Phillies thing. You'd never see a Sixers thing. You were going to see something with a green bird on it.
There's no doubt. Growing up in Chicago, you hope to get some type of Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
Anything, t-shirt, hat, jacket. Those are the big – well, actually, the big ones where – they used to have these jackets when I was a little kid at Sears, and they look like Letterman jackets, like the old-time Letterman jacket.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's kind of a wool material, and then this almost plasticky material on the arms, and it was blue and orange arms, and then little stripes on the wristbands area, like at the end of the sleeves, and they were by Sears, and they probably cost like $49, but at the time, $49 was a truckload. And I can remember we all got them. All my friends got them. We all had our new Bears jackets on.
I totally remember that jacket. I had that Eagles. I had the exact same one for Eagles.
Yeah.
I had about three versions because I outgrew them, but that was standard outfit for me.
Now, I have a negative present. For years, I would always get football jerseys, but they're always like those knockoff Sears ones. And then when I was about, I'm going to guess I'm 11. And maybe 11, 12, I wanted a real NFL jersey. And there was a website, or not a website, but there was like an ordering form you could get.
Oh, right.
But, you know, the websites hadn't been invented yet. And I gave my mom a list. I can remember this like it was yesterday. I wanted a Walter Payton jersey. If those weren't available, I wanted, I think, either Earl Campbell or, I don't remember if there was a third. I think it was Walter Payton or Earl Campbell's backup.
Not Roger Staubach. I'm thinking it's a Tony Dorsett.
Maybe Staubach. I like Staubach a lot. That's a good one. But
okay.
Little Paulie Pabst, probably 11,
mm-hmm.
Christmas Day, opens up, and I could see the tag. It was like that, I think it was like a Wilson NFL tag on the outside of the jersey. And I look at the color, and I'm like, it's green. It's green. Like, what is this? And I open it up, and I pull it out, and it's an Eagles number 7 Ron Jaworski jersey with Jaworski on the back. It was...
Now, wait, I seem to remember a story where you got a Magic Man, Don Majkowski, Green Bay Packers.
No.
Okay, I imagine.
No, it was Ron Jaworski. And I didn't not like Ron Jaworski or like him. I was ambivalent about the Eagles, ambivalent about Ron Jaworski. But there was nothing cool in my neighborhood about wearing a Ron Jaworski jersey. At least Earl Campbell had some cachet to it.
Yeah, the Polish rifle, Ron Jaworski, that would have been huge for my neighborhood.
My neighborhood had a lot of Polish people, so maybe I was not thinking
maybe that's where your mom was headed, but...
Okay.
Yeah, by the way, that's a weird nickname when you think about it. I don't think you'd see that today, the Polish rifle.
Right, it'd just be the rifle.
They'd
just call him the rifle.
Yeah, Ron Jaworski. So what did you do?
I didn't wear it because, I mean, I wasn't going to wear it. And I felt bad, and my mom couldn't take it back or something. And it's sitting at my mother's house. And I don't know if you know this, but my mother is moving closer to where I live. She's moving halfway across the country. And she has a couple bins worth of stuff that's all my stuff from grade school and high school that she just trugged around for years. She probably wants to dump it in the river. She goes, I'm finally going to be able to give you this stuff. And I guarantee you that Ron Jaworski jersey is in there. I guarantee it. I can't wait to bring it in here in about 8 weeks.
A little small Ron Jaworski jersey?
But you know what? She bought, God bless her, she bought like 3 sizes too big so I'd be able to wear it throughout, you know, junior high and high school. If she would have bought me a Peyton jersey, my life would be completely different.
That's, oh man, that's just a
Did you get any bad ones growing up?
So.
Or tickets or?
No, I remember one time, not really, because the one ticket I remember getting was awesome. Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh.
They were everything to me as a kid. So that's, remember,
wow.
And my mom took me because my dad couldn't go that night, and we went to the Harlem Globetrotters, and my mom had never been to the Spectrum, which is, remember where the yeah. Sixers used to play? So instead of, I don't know if I ever told you, instead of going to the Spectrum, she drove me to an oil refinery that looked like a big lit up arena, and we were driving around this oil refinery wondering where
she went the wrong way?
She pulled off the exit of I-76 right before the Spectrum, and there was a bunch of oil refineries.
Were you late, or did you make it?
I think we made it, because eventually she realized that was at a stadium. But there was no GPS back then, and it was awesome.
All right, before we get to the next topic, Leisureman tip of the week. Let's say we're talking to the bros out there, and how do you get your wife to get you a sports-related gift when you're not, like, 18 years and younger, when you're a middle-aged man or 30 or 40 or 50? And your wife says, what do you want for Christmas? Could you tell your wife I want tickets to an event, or could I want a golf lesson or a jersey? Or is jersey too childish to ask your wife to buy you?
Yeah, no.
You can't do that, right?
You can't do
that. That's sad.
Yeah, I like what you're talking about, like a golf thing. Like, yeah.
But so if you ask your wife, if your wife says, what do you want for Hanukkah? What do you want for Christmas? I would like a golf lesson, a 2-day golf lesson.
That's a great present. I really, really like that. I never get presents like that, but I don't think to ask them. That's on me.
Because otherwise you're going to get probably a bunch of sweaters, just like you did when you were 13 and you didn't like.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned to you before, I don't get any presents from my wife. I almost get nothing.
Are you sure you should be talking about this? I mean, is this
I hope she's listening. I because there was a list of priorities, like we got to deal with family members and kids. By the time it gets around to me, there's just nothing left.
It's weird because, and I think I speak for the husbands out there, I love my kids, and I get my kids, of course, Christmas presents, but my priority is my wife. I get a little paranoid the 3 weeks leading up to Christmas that it's not going to be a home run.
Okay, so which is more pressure, Christmas, Valentine's, birthday?
For me, probably Christmas, birthday. Birthday, you have to do something for the birthday. My wife, at least, is do something for my birthday. She doesn't say that, but that's the expectation. And she's very generous with me, so I'm not speaking out of school. But, like, if I don't do something where it's like we're going out somewhere with friends or an effort to do something, Christmas is more about the opening of the presents, old school.
Got it. Now, so I have an interesting dilemma. I have my wife's birthday is the end of February. So I have Valentine's and my wife's birthday right next to each other.
Yeah.
And as I've become a professional in the sports industry, gone for Super Bowl for a week. So I have to get a present because I've been gone for a week, a Valentine's Day present, and a birthday present. And she's made it clear that I can't do one present for all three. There's a lot of rules in the Perloff household, Paulie. It's no joke, man. I got to really deliver that time of year.
There's young bros out there right now listening, going, not me. That's not going to be how it is when I get married.
Ah!
You too, bro. You too. All right. You want a serious topic, a sports topic, or an All-American topic?
Oh, I want to hear all of – well, it's up to you.
Let's go serious.
Go serious.
You went to a memorial the other day for Dr. Z, Paul Zimmerman, the longtime – very, very well-known writer for Sports Illustrated. If you're too young to remember, back in, I would say, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, Paul Zimmerman was a preeminent football writer before Peter King, I think it's fair to say.
Absolutely.
I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah.
And back in the day, Paul Zimmerman used to do lots of articles for Sports Illustrated, but he was called Dr. Z.
Yeah.
He was his character. And every year he would do Dr. Z's predictions for the NFL season. You would open up, and I don't know that there was another person on a national platform who is doing season predictions for the NFL that had as much gravitas as him. This was pre-ESPN. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. And then he had a memorable name, Dr. Z, too. Yeah. So you'd see it on the cover all the time, Dr. Z's picks. And he would do picks weekly where people would base it. And he did was one of the early mock drafters.
Oh.
So at the memorial service, which is run by Peter King of NBC Sports, he talked about this one. Dr. Z was very serious about the mock draft. In 2000, he got 11 of the top 12 picks right.
Which is nuts.
It's nuts. And he got number, he said that Z always remembered he got number 25, Chris Hovan to the Vikings. And Peter, to his credit, ran through all the picks. The one he had wrong
He ran through the picks at the memorial service?
He ran through the picks.
See, that's great.
Yeah, and he goes, at number five was the Broncos, and Z had Chad Pennington to the Broncos because someone in the Broncos front office had told him they were going to take Pennington.
Did they take Portis?
I don't know. They went someone a lot less juicy than that. Pennington went later to the Jets, and Peter said that Z has never forgotten that, talks about it all the time, how he got screwed by one of his sources.
That's great.
But Dr. Z also, later in his career, he became sort of like this curmudgeon online. He did this Q&A, and he did this thing where he would time the national anthem, which other people have done. He did this one game that is right up your alley, Paul. His daughter told this story at the dinner that was really funny. He liked idiosyncrasies of people. He was a real like sort of button pusher, and he had a game where he would count how many times when the waiter was putting pepper on a salad or something, how many times she would turn it if he never said stop.
Right.
So he did a game where he would say, all right, I'm going to be pretending to talk to you while we're watching and counting how many times they turn it.
So he wouldn't care if the salad was ruined by over-peppering just for the comedic. I like that because he's trying to entertain himself.
Yes. So he said, his daughter told the story that one time the waitress turned it 37 times. And he said the salad was ruined, but it was the best thing that ever happened. Oh. So he was.
I like him way more now.
Yeah, he was so he's really interesting. If you were in with Z, then he was super cool. If not, he was famous.
And you were Inner Circle, right?
I was Inner Circle because I edited him at SI.com. He would have fights in the press box with other people over seats. He was a one of a kind. But you're right, there was this before the internet, Peter was talking about, like, he was the voice.
If you go pre 1985, when ESPN really hit stride and there's more national commentators and national sports magazines and national outlets for writers, there weren't a lot of nationally famous sports writers.
Yeah.
There was, Frank DeFord was, to me.
That's number one.
Frank
probably.
DeFord, but I think Dr. Z was earlier or at the same
time. Yeah, yeah. Couple other names. Dick Schaap was, because he was a writer.
Very
but he became
so.
A broadcaster, too.
And Dick Schaap did a lot of stuff on the evening news. Like, he would do, not like live reports, but like almost they would bring him in to talk about the Heisman, and they put him on the evening news, which gave Dick Schaap a lot of exposure to people who didn't really watch sports.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and we all had our local guys. Obviously, Chicago was loaded with legends. Philadelphia was loaded with legends. Couple quick Z stories. He was on the draft for ESPN.
Sure.
First couple years. He tells it this way. He was fired mid-draft because either Berman or somebody asked him, what do you see as the future of the NFL? He said, I think steroids are going to change the game completely. We're going to see a whole different style of athlete. He's like, it's going to follow the Olympic model.
And he's right.
ESPN fired him.
Right.
And then
he said that on the air.
He said that on the air. That's his version of it. Then he was actually a sideline reporter for NBC for a Jets. Week one, he got hired for the season. Week one, Jets, Dolphins. He did the first half, and he never came out the second half, and no one knows exactly what he said to the producers, but he got fired mid-game. He was an all-timer.
I'm starting to like him way more now.
He was a great writer, and he had this Q&A. Paul, you would have died. Like he, to his credit, he didn't like people who pretended to like football. Like he's like, if you're going to read me or if you're going to write about football, then really enjoy the sport.
Yeah, that's really cool that you got to work with him. I never got to meet him, but I got to work with, just for maybe about 4 months, Dick Schaap, the great Dick Schaap.
Yeah.
And he used to do the show The Sporting Life at ESPN. And on weekends, they would rotate different junior producers around at ESPN Network Radio. And I got rotated on it for, I guess, June, July, and August, if that sounds right, and leading right up to when he went into the hospital and passed away. I worked with him up to the point where he was getting, I think, hip surgery or some type of somewhat benign surgery, but he had these lung issues and so forth. But anyway, Dick Schaap would do this great radio show, and you'd sit there, and he didn't need much help from us producers, but we'd help him out and get some guests and do some things. But during the commercial break, Dick Schaap couldn't just sit there and not talk. And this is in the days before cell phones and, iPads and all that stuff. And Dick was at his home studio. his home radio studio. Myself and the other producer were up at ESPN Radio in Bristol, Connecticut. And there would be about a four-minute commercial break. And we'd be like, all right, we'd go to break. And also, I would just yell down the line, clear. And Dick would be like, all right, Paul, who's your team? I'm like, Mr. Schaap, I'm a Cubs fan. Let me tell you about the Cubs. He'd be like, and he would tell some in-depth Cubs story about being at a Cubs game or with a Cubs player or whatever it may be. And it was just awesome. And he would tell it in 3 minutes or 4 minutes or less because he knew the commercial breaks were a certain amount of time. And then I would say something. He's like, who's your favorite athlete, Pabst? And he loved my last name. I can think back. He liked my last name. He goes, did you change it to Pabst? I'm like, I wish I moved him, Mr. Schaap. And I asked him, I told him I was a Walter Payton fan. He goes, oh, see, you're off to a good start. Because like he liked that I liked Walter Payton. And he would tell these stories, and they were never recorded. And I wish somehow we could have recorded the commercial breaks. Because Dick Schaap probably told us 35, 40 stories over the course of these 4 months during the commercial breaks that I never heard before or since.
What is it that makes somebody like that so special? Is it a curiosity that not every reporter has? Like, why is – I think Dick Schaap is the top of the mountain, along with Frank DeFord and a couple others.
I think they're curious from day one till the end. They never get truly jaded, no matter how much famous and rich it could be. He could also tell a story where it didn't sound like he was bragging.
Yeah.
It's like he was doing you a favor to let you in on this piece of life that he got to see. All right, next topic.
By the way, real quick, I'm looking at most famous SI writers. Curry Kilpatrick, remember, he was a big deal. George Plimpton wrote the two most famous articles in history, Paper Lion and Sid Finch. And there was a guy, Dan Jenkins, who I missed.
Oh, sure.
But that is the most, like, we're talking like Mount Rushmore of big time sports writers.
All right, do you want to do something sports related and then then something American related?
Yeah, let's do sports.
Okay. Let's go really in advance. Everyone else is chopped up this week in football, college football. I want to already get to the off season. I'm going to name the team.
You're done with 2018 already?
2018 is over. I'm going with your thing. I want to go to the quarterback situations in the off season, but now.
Okay.
Because I want to get ahead of this. I'll name the team and the quarterback situation, and from 1 to 10, you tell me how serious it is. Okay?
Yep.
The Miami Dolphins and Ryan Tannehill.
Ooh, 7. They love him down there, by the way. I've heard that. It's the weirdest thing. I've read that in local papers. They really think Tannehill is great.
So, I thought this year it felt like it was going the wrong way, the Adam Gase, that he was jabbing him for being injured and not really talking about it. It felt like it was bad this year.
Yeah, they're committed to him, but they can't stay healthy. Now, here's the interesting. What happens to the Dolphins this season? They play the Patriots this weekend, and they always win against the Patriots in Miami. They're 6-6, have the easiest schedule in the world. What if they go 9-7? Can you fire Adam Gase?
Let's put a pin on this one, as they say in the corporate world. Do the Miami Dolphins have a new quarterback next year, that new starting quarterback, whether it be rookie or other?
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's Ryan Tannehill.
The Baltimore Ravens quarterback situation.
Oh, that's Lamar Jackson in 2019.
But 1-10.
9. No, no, 7.
10 means it's serious and something's going to happen.
I don't even, I just think they've won their first three games with Lamar Jackson. He's really shown a lot of skills. Flacco can't be there as a backup.
Lamar can only really get better and more comfortable, right?
Absolutely. He's still learning the game. You draft a first-round quarterback and you play him, like, there's no space for Flacco. He can't be there as a backup, right?
It seems to, and you know, Flacco's younger than he appears. He appears very old manish for NFL quarterback.
What do you think? What's your number on that one?
Well, the fact that they drafted Lamar Jackson late in the first round, that means you have to go to him eventually.
Yeah.
And why wait?
Yeah, they're there. And they're winning. He's playing well.
I think the fans will be okay with it.
Oh yeah. I mean, Flacco won them a Super Bowl, which is awesome, but Lamar is the future.
Cincinnati Bengals. Quarterback situation.
Volatility
level.
They could, you know, the Bengals set up this contract with Dalton where they have a lot of year-to-year flexibility, but they don't pay him that much. He had really good numbers this year. I would be surprised. I'd be very, very surprised if they moved on. But the question is, a new coach coming in.
About a three?
Yeah, about a three. But the question is, will they finally part ways with Marvin Lewis, and will there be somebody completely different?
See, I have a theory that if the new coach comes in for the Bengals, he will not get rid of Dalton. Mm-hmm. You get 1 year with Dalton, and then he goes into the draft, and he gets probably 2 years with the new drafted quarterback.
Right. Unless it works with Dalton. Because
if it works, then you're
ever
all
set. If you ever had A.J. Green, Tyler Eifert, Andy Dalton, and Joe Mixon healthy, then maybe they're interested.
It's like an eclipse, right?
Yeah.
Denver Broncos. Case Keenum up and down. A little better lately. They're 6-6.
Yeah.
A real a real quiet 6-6.
All depends on what happens the rest of the season. They have this really
easy. But you got to tell me now.
Really easy schedule. His contractually, he's almost definitely back there. The question is, will they draft a young guy? Honestly, I think, and obviously a Case Keenum fan, as I know you are, he'll outplay anyone they draft. So I expect him to be the starting quarterback next year. They might have a young guy in the building.
They're 6-6. If they end up like 7-9, and they're picking around the like 18th spot, 16th spot, there could be some quarterbacks available there.
Well, they have at the Niners. I could see them losing to Nick Mullins. They have the Browns at home. They have Oakland. And then they have the L.A. Chargers in Week 17 who may not be playing for anything. 7-9 is not happening.
The Oakland Raiders.
Ooh,
how volatile? 1-10.
Man, 6. But that's right. That right there is, in my opinion, the most intriguing one.
They have they're probably going to have the first or second overall pick in the draft. At worst, right now, they're going to have the second pick of the draft. And they'll have probably picks like 21 and 23. So they can either go all in at one. I don't think there's anyone they're going to trade down for. This doesn't seem like a year of trading up for Nick Bosa. And or they can hold their breath and hope that they can get someone later in the first round.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because the thing with John Gruden, he likes older veteran quarterbacks. Rich Gannon got him to the Super Bowl. Or no, I'm sorry, Brad Johnson. What was his? Did Gruden win or lose? He won with Brad Johnson, but he likes Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon.
So, like, would he want a Teddy Bridgewater or a Tyrod Taylor or a Derek Carr? I don't know that they're going to draft a big arm. Justin Herbert, for example, does not feel like a John Gruden quarterback. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's a real tough one. All right, let me go to the New York Giants. The New York Giants, they have righted the ship lightly.
Yeah, I watched Eli the other day. If you give Eli some space, he can throw an NFL football. I don't know. I can't believe I'm saying this. I think they're going to give Eli another chance. I would give it a 5 on volatility. No, I'd give it a 6 on volatility.
They're going to have a top 8 pick in the draft, probably. They're probably going to have like 7, 8, 9 around there, depending how it goes the rest of the year. But since Saquon Barkley was playing very well, he's signed. They don't owe him any money, really. Not real money. Not monster money. Odell Beckham signed. Eli signed. You don't have to spend new money or make cuts and mess with the cap. You could see how this triumvirate plays for the next year or two. And Saquon Barkley is playing real well.
But they keep losing. I don't get, and I'm not sure how they keep losing. Maybe if the but didn't we do this last year? I'm just afraid of the flashback to last year. I don't know. And I listen to a lot of New York radio. They love Eli. But
you know, their offense has scored 267 points this year. That's not bad.
Eli's stats aren't really that bad either. I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do.
The Detroit Lions quarterback situation, 1-10.
I'd say I give it 2 for any volatility there.
You've been a big poo-pooer of the Matt Stafford will be traded or let go bandwagon.
So Peter King said on DP show that maybe you trade Matt Stafford to the Jaguars. But if you're the Lions, that's one thing you have on your team that is of value.
Right.
What else you have? Who else you have? Kerryon Johnson's a nice rookie, but he's a running back. What if you took Matthew Stafford off that team, what do you got? What are you trading him for?
Yeah, like some defensive back, some first.
But you're giving me a look like maybe it's time to rebuild there.
I don't know. No, it's so hard to find a quarterback. You'll be kicking yourself if you go somewhere else. But there's a guy I could see John Gruden taking. What if John Gruden called and said, I'll give you one of those.
The number one pick.
What if I give you the 23rd pick and the 25th pick for Matt Stafford straight up?
No way.
I bet the Lions would take it.
No way. For Matthew Stafford? No way. I know he's expensive.
I call Matt, by the way.
No, I don't think. I think you'd have to trade the number one pick.
Because let's say, this is a total hypothetical sports radio topic, but let's say John Gruden said, I'll give you the 23rd pick and 25th pick for Matt Stafford. Detroit would be on the clock with the 5th pick in the draft, the 23rd and 25th. They can get their quarterback and two other great players and go in a whole different direction with that franchise.
Have you looked at the Lions draft picks in the last 5 years?
Yes.
You want that 23rd and 25th pick for your franchise quarterback, and you're going to bring in Drew Locke? Oh, my gosh. Say hello to 2-14.
Say hello to 2-14. All right, last team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 1-10.
Man, Jameis has looked pretty good the last couple weeks.
Yeah, of course he is.
Now, I can't believe it. Derek Carr, Eli Manning, and Jameis Winston are ruining narratives. I don't know that who you could bring in that's better. And he's young. He's young. I hate to say it. I think I'm going to stick with Jameis.
He's tougher to get rid of. You can give it one more year and still get rid of him. But then you may not fire your head coach, Dirk Cutter, then.
I think you'll still fire Dirk Cutter.
Oh, yeah?
Why not try with a different coach? Because, it's not just like that the defense is bad. It doesn't seem like there's accountability every week with the Bucs. Like, they're like the opposite of the Patriots. They don't seem to do everything right.
All right, next topic. This is an All-American topic.
Yeah.
The Seattle market has added an NHL team. They've got the they haven't named the new team, but Seattle in 2021, I think it is, will have an NHL team, which makes they don't have to move anybody. They're getting to 32.
Yeah.
A lot of teams like a lot of leagues like to move people. Which league should expand without moving? Could the NFL expand without moving a team, or are they maxed out?
It seems like 32 is the max. I don't know why, but I don't feel an expansion coming.
It's clean. It's 8-8, you know, all that stuff.
Right. What are the other – do you have the numbers of the other – is it 30 for the NBA?
I think everything is, you know, a round number. But what if the NFL added two expansion teams?
To 34.
Let's say I was your boss. I'm Roger Goodell. Yeah. And I test you with adding two expansion teams to the NFL. That doesn't mean you can't move somebody.
So I think the immediate concerns with expansion are you diluting the talent pool? I'm not too scared about that.
No.
Are you screwing up the competitive balance of the league because not everyone will play each other? Two teams.
That doesn't bother me that much either.
So what are the downsides?
So let's say, okay, I'm going to go first. I got to have Vegas. I got to have a team in Vegas.
Well, the Raiders.
Right. That's already there. What I'm saying is, though, do you go back to California and with one of the teams there, or you don't want to do Oakland, you don't want to do San Diego?
I don't know why you need to do Oakland. Yeah, it's so funny you bring this up. I'm not sure I've heard of teams clamoring for an NFL team.
So is there a spot in America right now? Is there a town big enough?
San Antonio's always wanted one. Texas is football crazy.
Okay, they would sell it out.
Portland has a really successful NBA team, but they don't feel like they're dying for NFL.
It almost seems like the Seahawks are the Northwest's
team. Toronto is a very viable city.
But then you wouldn't put Toronto, a team in Toronto, you would move the Bills, and nobody wants you to move the Bills.
You don't want to move the Bills. Well, why not just add a team, an expansion team?
Is it too close to Buffalo? Or is
it
Montreal?
Montreal. See, Montreal, they're too French. They would not be as interested.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they want soccer.
Jordan.
Now, are you going to get into the overseas market, the two overseas markets, Mexico City and London?
What if you expanded to Mexico City and London simultaneously?
I mean, there'd be a lot of money in that, and you know where the NFL goes. Could you make that work? Could you make those two cities work from a competitive balance first?
Actually, we just stumbled upon something. Instead of getting the negative blowback of moving the Jaguars or moving whatever team you're going to move, just expand two teams, one east, one west. There you go. Done. Mexico City and London, back-to-back years, but you announce them simultaneously, or you have them do it at the same time.
But what about like the issues with London? Like how are the Chargers going to go to London in the middle of the season? Schedule buys around them?
You play teams in the East for the most part, and
But it's seven more hours.
You have to go to London once every 4 years.
No, but you can't do that if they're in like what division are they in? Yeah, you're right. If you're the Chargers,
NFC East.
So they're in the NFC East. The London
Jaguars.
The London Jaguars. The London Fog are in the NFC East. You're Dallas. You're telling me that's not going to screw up your season?
The Bangers and Mash.
You know, they are sending a lot of teams to London now anyway. I think you solved something. I think you got it.
Yeah, two at once. And then you don't get the criticism from exporting a team to another country. You're just adding.
What about the salary problem? That the dollar is
paying in euros?
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to pay the players more to be in London because the dollar isn't where the pound is, actually. They're getting out of the euro business.
Let's say you were a high-end quarterback, and you're a top 25 pick, and your agent said, hey, man, there's two teams that want you. Let me think of a team.
Cincinnati Bengals and the London
Cincinnati Bengals
Fog.
Or the London Bangers and Mash. And your agent goes, you could basically pick because they want to see who's going to be more friendly to a contract. It's hypothetical.
Okay. Yeah, London be tempting.
When you want to be the face of football in the UK, even though you're still niche,
yeah,
it's like being Landon Donovan in the MLS.
You know, it's interesting. Mexico City would have a huge altitude advantage, even more than Denver. So teams would be totally winded when they came to Mexico City. Although, do you want to live in Mexico City? Not everyone would. Wow, this is interesting, man. By the way, not happening. I have a feeling none of this is going to happen, though.
Speaking of London, that's whenever you go to London, you could always find a nice pub to get a nice pint of Guinness.
Yes.
It is Guinness time of year. I'm not kidding, bros. Get it together for the holiday season. I'm already planning some parties up in Vermont, and I'm going to load up on some good Guinness, have it at my bar, go to your local pub, get some Guinness, go to your local package store, bring it home, get some Guinness for your holiday fair this week. Get it now. You always get some Guinness Blonde for your wife because she's a big favorite of that. So go out and get some Guinness today. All right, before we wrap up the podcast, anything else you want to get off your chest today?
Yeah, real quick, you brought something up on the radio show a couple weeks ago. There is a trend in the NFL that I want the Leisure Men to be on top of.
Oh, go ahead.
The run defense combo is the real deal now. And I know this because I've been watching my Denver Broncos. They are running more than they're passing, and they're playing defense, and they're not turning the ball over, and they're winning.
Do I get any credit on this?
Yeah. But your Bears, probably the same way. The Houston Texans all of a sudden are giving you a heavy dose of Lamar Miller and J.J. Watt. I think the defense, all of a sudden, in the year of huge passing numbers, something weird is going on in the NFL. You saw it a few weeks ago. What if we have like a Bears-Texans Super Bowl?
Well, I kind of thought that the couple years ago, I thought that the Tennessee Titans were going to go that way. Yeah. And with Derrick Henry and DeMarco Murray and guys like that, I think the team that's doing it is Seattle.
Yeah.
They drafted Rashad Penny higher than he should have. Yeah. And they have a two running back system where they're not going to pay either of these guys ever, I guarantee it. And they're not putting as much pressure on Russell Wilson. They're cutting down Russell's dropbacks, and he's as efficient as he's ever been in his career. I think he's a 70% passer. He's never been 70 before. And he's having one of the best efficiency years, not yardage years, of his career. And I think if you look at it as maybe even a business decision, you're never going to pay running backs. You have to pay wide receivers eventually. Wide receivers get a second contract. And if the Seattle Seahawks say, like, we'll just keep drafting running backs in the second and third round for perpetuity, grab a couple linemen here and there, and then find some wide receivers on the market that Russell can make look good. You always say decent receivers and a great quarterback are better than the opposite.
Yeah, although Russell needs a healthy Doug ball when we learned this year. He's much better with a healthy Doug ball. Yeah, it's great, man. I love it. Also, they have like this deep ball component too because everyone's up on the run.
Right.
It's all complimentary football.
Complimentary football. Whatever that means, we're all into it. All right, thanks for listening to Leisureman Podcast. And don't forget the wildly successful 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Sunday Night Leisureman Radio Show. 3 years in and rolling, just cruising into another year. Keep tuning in to the Leisureman every Sunday night on NBC Sports Radio.
6 to 9 Eastern.